Hey, what's up, everybody? Chad Kalick here, and welcome back to the In a Crowded Room podcast, where on this episode, we are going to talk about the Love Has Won cult, led by Amy Carlson, otherwise known as Mother God. Have you guys heard of this story? There is a docuseries on right now on HBO about this cult and the demise of Mother God, Amy Carlson. And it is a dark, dark watch. Very good docuseries, but really mind-blowing in a lot of different ways. And I've always been really fascinated by cults and cult leaders. I have a documentary called Shepherds that kind of explains some unique patterns that I've discovered in cult leaders. And we'll discuss that later and how it actually applies to this docuseries as well. By the way, if you hear some snoring, that is Chapo. He is hanging out next to me right now. He pretty much loves crashing out by Dad wherever Dad goes in the house, so I will try to compress that out of the sound. But anyways, yes, the Love Has Won cult. I first heard of this cult and this Mother God, Amy character. Gosh, I think it was in 2000, probably 21, a couple years ago, because there was a video that was going around online that had gone viral. And it is a dark, dark video. It starts out with these two police officers, and they're outside this kind of rundown house that has a bunch of, looks like a bunch of trash stacked up on the outside, and you know, old barrels, old furniture, like just all kinds of crap outside this place. And it's the video that the cops wear when they have their recorder on. So it's one of those Axiom videos. And you see them knock on the door, and this guy answers the door. And the police right away just say, hey, you know, we're here to do a welfare check. They say on the kids and on Amy Carlson, in which there's this hippie-ish looking guy that is very polite and welcomes them in and says, yeah, the children are in the other room. And he says, you know, Amy is at rest. And he pauses and he waits a few seconds and no one says anything. And he's like, she has rested. She is in the back room. And you could tell that he's trying to see if they're catching on to what he's saying. That she's not rested in the way that we would rest. She's dead, obviously. And these police kind of have that in mind. They think that's probably what's going on. So they just say, okay, you know, where is this room? And they point these police officers in the direction. And it is really creepy. You see these cops walk into this room, and there's all these Christmas lights that are, you know, just plugged in, and they're all wrapped up around this, you know, thing that's in the bed, which obviously it's a corpse, but it just looks like a big rolled up ball of, like, blankets or something. And you see the footage where the, you know, this cop pulls out his flashlight and he's, you know, waving the flashlight around and he's kind of looking to see, like, you know, what is, you know, inside this thing? What is, you know, what's going on here? And at first you can't really see anything. And then all of a sudden the light just glares off her eyes and you see this extremely shrunken corpse that is like dark blue in color, and it's just that one of those like holy shit moments. And it's dark, it's real dark. And you see the police, you know, basically go out and say, Yeah, guys, you got a dead body back here, so everyone here is under arrest. And that footage, like I said, it went viral. I saw it. I remember thinking, what the heck is going on? These people are living with this, dead body. And that's kind of where this whole docuseries starts. So it starts at the end, so you can kind of see, this scenario, and then does the classic, now let's work backwards and show you how it all began and bring you up to speed. And I've always been fascinated by, not only, like I said, cult leaders and how they get, people to follow them, but I've been as equally fascinated with the people who follow. Because, like I said, it's very easy to just call people crazy. And I hate when people jump to that right away, because it's just, like I said, it's not only dismissive, but it's just kind of lazy. Rather than to just do the research and say, why is this happening? It's just too easy to go, oh, well, they're all fucking crazy. Which I'm not to say that there aren't some crazy people in the world. Of course there are. But in a lot of cases, in the research that I've done, you find out that there are reasons, like specific reasons, why certain people wind up either leading a cult or being a part of one. Charlie Manson, I'm sorry. Charlie Manson is a great example of that. And there's just so much history that when you dig into it, usually you find out about these people that is really shocking. I mean, most people don't even know that Charlie Manson was a Scientologist. There's just a lot of history there with him, that kind of bleeds onto other cult leaders as well. But anyways, we'll come back to more of that later. But I'll give you a little bit of the story here if you haven't seen it yet, and kind of explain, what they show in the series and kind of who this Amy Carlson is. What's really interesting is in the beginning, they kind of show her early teen years. They don't really touch on her early childhood, but they just show her in her teen years. And for one, she is shockingly beautiful. I mean, absolutely a 10. I mean, just beautiful. And she's also very into music and into singing, and I wouldn't say that she has a great voice, but she loves doing it. And they show her in her high school choir, and she's always singing in all these video clips of her. And they talk about the fact that she loved music, she loved doing karaoke, and seemingly had a pretty normal, as far as teen years go. And had different boyfriends at different times. And there's nothing really about her teen years that they show that, seems, weird or off or anything like that. It seems like a fairly normal, upbringing. And they talk about the fact that she wasn't super poor or anything. I mean, they were like, middle class family. And her father wasn't around, but her mother was. And they just kind of jump to her being 13 or 14 to graduated, and she's 18 now, and she has a child. And they talk about how she really struggled at motherhood, at kind of the responsibilities of being a mother. And the guy that got her pregnant, didn't wait too long before he just bounced out on her. And she was, left alone, to raise that, first child. And then she ends up having, I believe, two more children, with another guy who also leaves her. And before you know it, she's, in her early 20s, and she has three kids, and she's, working odd jobs, here and there, trying to, do her best to keep up as a mother. And then all of a sudden, one day, she just leaves these kids. She completely abandons them, just disappears, and leaves these kids with her mother, I believe it is. And from there, she just kind of falls off the radar again. And then you see her in her late 20s. She kind of shows back up. And you find out that she was out in Colorado. She went out there. And she met this old hippie type of dude. And you could tell this guy really meant well. He was just like a nature, I don't want to call him a nature freak. But, you know, people who just love nature. And he was explaining to her basically all of his just thoughts about the world and God. And you could tell that he viewed the world through that, the literal, you know, man was created in the image of God. And this guy called himself Father God. And he called her Mother God. And he just kind of explained that out there in the middle of nowhere where there's no city, no cop, no anything, or no law enforcement, no nothing, that all of that was theirs, all that nature was theirs. And it was their sky, it was their sun and moon, it was their trees. And you could tell that he meant it like not in a literal way, like I am God, I created all this. He just kind of meant, you know, out here in this situation, you know, we're the rulers of our own world, right? There's no, like I said, there's no law enforcement. There's no legal system, political system. This guy caught and captured his own food to eat. And he says, she took everything I taught her. And from there, she just created something else out of it. And all of a sudden, as simple as this girl just starts going on social media and posting her thoughts and claiming that she is, like Jesus. She is God on earth. She has been sent down here like Jesus to suffer the sins of man so that none of us have to suffer. It's a weird kind of perversion of the Christianic belief of, you know, Jesus suffering the sins of man and then being resurrected and that whole story. But with her, there's no like 3 days that she suffered the sins of man. There's no like purgatory. It's just while she's alive, she's suffering the sins of man on a daily basis. And they keep saying that she's doing it. They have terms. These are the people that are following her. They have terms of like, she had to release energy. They kept saying that the sins of the world, she took on all that negative energy and she had to process this energy and release it. And no one even knows what that is. It's just someone saying they're doing something, right? It's really bizarre. But basically, she starts, just posting all of her beliefs and everything, the way the universe works and the way heaven works. And it's really strange in the sense that I'm not making this up. Robin Williams, the deceased comedian actor, is like her number two. She's God, and her spiritual being that essentially runs the universe with her and consults with her on everything is Robin Williams. And there's other celebrities as well that have passed away. And you could tell it's just people she's fond of. And she wants to believe that she's somehow connected with them still. Even right down to weird stuff at the end where she's, well, it's all kind of weird, but she's claiming that she's a daughter of Donald Trump. She likes Trump. So she's saying she's the daughter of Donald Trump as well. Which, how can you be, God and Trump's daughter? I mean, it's very, very hard to understand. But she starts, putting all these beliefs up. And slowly but surely, these beliefs start, reaching certain people that buy into it. And you see her slowly building this community. And She also, from the very jump, she doesn't believe in hospitals, and she believes that they're, really bad for you, and they have all these plans that basically kill you slowly. But for some reason, they never say why or where she got this, but she believes that colloidal silver, which is great for if you have like cuts, like basically colloidal silver is a great killer of like microbacteria, like microbial bacteria. But she is drinking this stuff, drinking this colloidal silver, and when I say drinking it, I mean like by the gallons, man, like huge bottles filled of this colloidal silver, and she believes that cures everything, anything and everything in your body. This colloidal silver, she believes it can cure cancer. She believes it can, cure any kind of disease you have. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's bizarre. And you could tell right away when you see that, it's like, there's going to be problems here. And, again, she starts getting a larger and larger following, and the jobs of these people, to basically live with her at this compound, which is basically an old, building that's been given to her. And they have kind of, restored it and put time, energy, effort, and work into making this place livable. And they all live there. But it's the job of everybody else to basically make money and give it to her. And it all goes in one account. And that's what they do because she is supposedly busy all day long. Speaking to the angels and speaking to these people that she believes are flying these spaceships, and they think that the clouds in the sky are spaceships. So you can see them. There's videos of them looking at like these lenticular clouds that look, round and kind of spaceship-ish, these big, massive kind of round clouds. But they're clearly just clouds, obviously. And buddy, you are snoring away, man, right now. You are snoring like crazy. But they believe that there's these ships that are just above us all. And when she ascends to heaven, when she is done, basically suffering all the sins of mankind, that these ships are going to come down from the skies down to earth, load her up and take her. And then she will, after she dies, the belief is that she will once again have her body restored, where she'll then be returned to the world to live as, herself, a normal, Amy Carlson. But as it stands right now, she is Mother God. And everybody that she dates, by the way, they become Father God. But she presents it in a way that all these men that she dates, they're just vessels. That there's one Father God being, which is the father of all creation, which I don't know how that's different from her saying she's the mother of all creation. But basically, every time she gets a new boyfriend, they become the father, Father God, because supposedly this spirit jumped from the last boyfriend into the new boyfriend. And all of these guys are just vessels to carry the spirit of Father God so it can be near her. Now, like I said, that's all these people do is they take care of her and they preach about how, basically how shitty the world is, how bad human beings are, how bad the political system is, which there's a lot, obviously there's a lot of problems with society. There's a lot of problems with the political system. There's a lot of problems with the banking industry. Like all these, basic issues that people know about, they just go online and they just repeat these. So they don't really do anything, like I said, but raise money, work local jobs, and then get Mother God whatever she wants. Now you see that this Amy, Mother God, develops a massive, massive drinking problem. And she has everybody there convinced, or at least they're going along with it, that the alcohol is actually good for her because it's killing, these spiritual monsters that are trying to take over her soul. And the alcohol is also killing bacteria and bad viruses along with the colloidal silver. So these guys will get her, whatever drink she wants all day long, 24/7. And even in the interviews after she's gone, they all stood by it and they're saying weird stuff like, well, to the untrained eye, I realize it looks like she's drinking a lot, but that was divine. The plan was supposed to be for that. And the proof that it wasn't hurting her, this one guy actually says this, the proof that it wasn't hurting her is because she could drink 24 hours in a row, far more than any man that they've ever seen. And that their claim was she would never get drunk. She would never appear inebriated. Which they're just not looking at the truth, because you can clearly tell in the videos, when she's drunker than other times. And they just didn't want to believe that that's just what she's doing. They're getting money and she's living off alcohol. And as the story goes, basically she has, these different boyfriends that she runs through, and the group is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And you can see that the weight of Amy's promises, all the stuff she's basically said, the world will do this. Once I, rid the world of all these sins, peace will break out for so many years, and it'll start in this place. And she's just basically giving them, all these spiritual things that are going to happen, that don't have actual dates, but have time frames, where she's like saying, around this, once I do this, then around this, this will happen, that type of thing. And you can see that it's obviously weighing on her, because she clearly has a problem with alcohol now. She's an absolute drunk, and she can't really do anything physically because she stops eating and she develops anorexia really bad. And she's just getting weaker and weaker and weaker every day. And you could really start to see through her videos and through her messages that she, knows it's all bullshit. She knows that. Right up to the point where there are some videos where she's talking to members of this cult. And she's saying to them, it's all bullshit. Like, everything I'm saying is bullshit. Like, I don't have the powers to make anything happen. But then she would say, what if it's like that? What if that's actually the case? What if I'm wrong and everything that I do is just absolute crap? And then again, they talk to the followers and they're like, well, that's just the devil working on her and making her doubt herself. And every time she would have, those doubting attacks, she would fire back so sure of what she is and what she's doing. And look, the facts are she's God on earth and you better get with it, everybody. And they're totally preaching like that to the public. Like, you think we're crazy? You are crazy. The public is crazy. And if you guys don't get in line and recognize that this woman right here, this is God. If you don't recognize that now, you're all going to pay for it. And that's like their actual, view, is that the world's going to be completely fucked unless they recognize that this girl is God and they should do whatever she wants. Now she's developing really weird habits and stuff too. Like, there's certain video games that she has to play, and she's just a video game freak. So in order to keep, the web, they have a web connection. It's got to be like the fastest web possible so she can play online. And she now wants, she's starting to get weaker, so she decides she doesn't want to walk anymore. So she has people carry her around so she doesn't have to walk, and she decides she wants a go-kart. So how they get bigger money items is they just basically go online and they start saying, Mother God needs more whiskey. She needs more silver. She needs video games. She needs to buy this go-kart. And, if you're out there, you need to give money. And they're literally saying things like, who doesn't want to help God out? Who doesn't want to give God money to buy a go-kart? And I'm like laughing, thinking, so she's God. She can create the universe. She could grant life and take life away. She could create the heaven and the stars, but, she can't get her hands on a go-kart. And it's like, I don't think they ever caught on to the irony of all this shit. It's like, guys, come on, really? And she just, yeah, just became more and more sick. And above all, beyond, her body and the anorexia, her mind is sick. And you can see that. And it's really sad when you start watching it. Of course, there's a tendency with the outlandish to almost like laugh in the beginning because things are so corny and all the Robin Williams stuff. And but like as it goes, like I said, it just becomes really, really heartbreaking. Her story, and especially once you get beyond her story and to the other people. Well, what's kind of crazy is you learn that, I shouldn't say crazy, it's a bad term. What's even more bizarre is you do later learn, and this is really important, and I'll come back to this. You later learn that basically something happened during her childhood, and they don't say right away what it is. But you also learn that her kids, they know that their mother is like this cult leader. And the kids are trying to contact her to basically say, like, this is as they get older, because they're like, in their teens when they first kind of recognize, who she is and what she's doing. And, basically she tells her kids, you're welcome to come out here and stay with me and basically live this life, but I can't, come back there type of thing. And, you could just see it. It just tears these poor kids up, man. And yeah, it's just really, really dark. And the only thing that's really kind of really, really hard to understand is that you do eventually find out that there was some form of abuse that she suffered as a child. And because there's so little documentation, during her early childhood, and there's so few people that can talk about it, you never really know, like I said, what exactly happened besides the suggestion that there was abuse there. Which begs the question, why all of this? Like, why does she become, this Mother God character? I mean, why would she just give up her kids? And why would, she go out and basically start all of this? And either it really is unclear, or the documentary didn't do a great job of kind of giving their opinion. And I have my opinion, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But to kind of wrap this up, where it all kind of goes, because it gets really, really dark. But essentially, as she's getting sicker and sicker, her last father god, her last boyfriend, becomes like the guy that really has this connection with her. Now, what's strange is this dude's like, they talk about him like he's a career like petty criminal, like he's done just small crimes his whole life, burglary, stealing money here, stealing money there, robbing places. He's got just like this record, they basically say. And he's a metalhead. He loves Pantera. He's like a total alpha male. And the entire, following can't stand him. And they're just kind of like, why in the hell would Mother God try to force this Father God down our throat? Like, we don't like this guy. But it's weird. They kind of grow to accept him. And I think it's because he had, as hard as it is to understand when you're watching it, he had this a very real love for this girl. Like I said, love works in strange ways, and that is a fact. I mean, it's just, you can never, love is one of those things that just is nonsensical, period. It's the most amazing thing in the world, but there's no blueprint to it. So there's no real way to describe his connection, because at first, it just looks like in the beginning that he's just like, oh, I can live off this girl. If I just take care of her, then I could live for free. I don't gotta do, petty burglaries or any of that shit anymore. I'll just, pretend to be Father God, and she's Mother God, and, of this little world, I can be a big fish in a small pond type thing. But you can see that he does develop this really, like I said, strange, but what appears to be a legitimate love for Amy, or Mother God, as they call her. So as she's getting more and more ill because she's drinking her, liver to death, and on top of all the alcohol that's hardening her liver, because she's not eating, it's just pure alcohol. She's also dumping gallons, guys, gallons of colloidal silver down her throat. And you start seeing that as her organs are beginning to fail. I am not kidding, guys. She first turns blue. I mean, like, she turns like Smurf blue. And it is disturbing. I mean, when she's alive, she turns blue. And if you know anything about alcoholism, when really, really bad alcoholics come into like detox, and I mean alcoholism on the verge of psoriasis of the liver, they'll often come in green. Like, you can Google pictures, you can Google alcoholic psoriasis of the liver green, and you can see photos of what people look like when they're in their deep stages of alcohol abuse and what it does to their liver and what that does to the body once the liver's shot. So you see her turning colors. And she first turns blue. And to me, that was obvious that that's the silver, that her organs are shutting down. And in the meantime, she just has a steady diet of colloidal silver the whole time. And you later, learn in the end that yes, that was the case. It's the silver that turned her blue. And while this is happening, Amy's boyfriend, Father God, she's basically saying, I'm having visions of where I'm supposed to go. And like, she decides, I'm supposed to go from Colorado to Hawaii. And he's like, okay, I mean, he knows she's going to die soon. So he's really doing this out of the fact that he loves her and he's just not leaving her side. And he takes her out to, Hawaii. And, he really is not leaving her side. Like, he's picking her up whenever she wants to move anywhere. If she wants to go from, they were in this one room where her bed was, and there's like a little couch to watch TV, and they're like 6 feet apart. I mean, this guy will pick her up and set her 6 feet, away. Like, they don't let her take one step. And they say it's because she can't. That's what they say, that her legs don't work anywhere. And the funny thing is, the whole time, everybody is going, man, the world just doesn't fucking get it, man. They're just fucking her up, dude. They're not realizing that, she's suffering this for all of you. And, nobody cares, man. Nobody's going to slow down the sinning or anything. Just going to make her suffer it. As they're like pouring her, like 100 proof, alcohol shots for breakfast. There's actually a shot in there where Father God gives her, like, you could tell it's a shot of like ancient age whiskey, which is like so intense. And he's like, here's your breakfast. And he hands it to her, and she's like, and if people don't, he's like, if people out there don't like it, we don't give a fuck. You know, so for breakfast, she's like downing massive shots of liquor, which is just, again, rough to watch when she's already blue as she's doing it. Well, eventually, she moves to Maui in Hawaii, and then right, you know, she's down to her final, like, days. She basically says, yeah, now I got a vision, and I got to go to Oregon again. And they're all just like, dude, how did we do this? Like, we're on an island, and we got to fly her, you know, to the mainland. And how do we, you know, do that when she's blue, you know? And they never really explain it, other than to say they just got there. And they show them roll into Oregon, and they get, like, this hotel room, and they're taking this girl back and forth from the hot tub to, like, a cold shower to a hot hot tub to a cold shower. And by now, she's also just, I mean, she honestly looks like a prisoner camp victim. I mean, she has no muscles, like, no anything, nothing. She is absolutely, you know, far beyond any potential that you could ever bring her back, could ever heal her at this point. Like, the damage has been done. Her body is fucked up bad. Well, the end of the story is, as you could imagine, she dies. And the following footage is some truly disturbing stuff. I was incredibly surprised that they actually included this footage in the documentary. Because over the course of the next 12 days, like I said, she's a corpse. I mean, she's gone. They're doing weird stuff like taking a trifield meter and they're putting it up to her body. And if any like electricity shows up on the trifield meter, then they're going, see, she's still alive. She's still here. She's still breathing. They kept saying, and it's like, no, guys, she's not breathing. They have a trifield meter on, like the same ones you use during ghost hunting, right? And in the room, there's cell phones ringing. There's a microwave on. You can hear the TV on. It's like there's not even a thought or a consideration as to how do you actually use this trifield meter. But they're trying to basically say that she's coming back and there's already signs of it right now. And they're sitting around playing music and singing songs to her. Which, by the way, the one thing I wanted to mention is if you, you know, watch my Shepherds documentary, it talks about Jim Jones, Manson, Applewhite, David Koresh. I kind of point out that all four of those guys, they all used music as a serious recruiting tool. Big time. David Koresh was an accomplished, you know, metal guitar player. Like, no shit, he could actually play the hell out of the guitar. He wasn't much of a singer, but when he would hold recruiting sessions, he would, you know, invite people out, and he would plug in with the band, and he would play guitar and just impress people with it. And you can see videos of it, of his recruiting sessions, where he's just rocking out on guitar and playing everything from like ZZ Top to Dire Straits, and then playing like his own music, and people loved it. Marshall Applewhite, the guy that was the head of the Heaven's Gate cult, he was a vocal instructor at Colorado, the Buffaloes, the University of Colorado. He was an actual vocal instructor The guy can sing like crazy. He also used music at his recruiting events that he had. As we know, Manson, Guns N' Roses recorded one of his songs on the Spaghetti Incident. He was, seconds away from getting a record deal through the Beach Boys. And he always played music at his big, like, acid trip bonfire events. That was a huge thing with him. Now, Jim Jones couldn't sing or play anything, but he famously hired these Southern Baptist, like, choirs of these, these soul singers that, again, at his events, he would have just massive, like, musical shows and choir shows that people could take part in. Oddly enough, with this cult here, like I said, Amy loved music and loved singing. She wasn't incredible at it. But if you watch this footage, especially through all of the early stuff when she's building, her following, you see nothing but every father god that she has, every new boyfriend can play guitar and can sing. And they're all sitting around with her, singing all these songs and inviting all these members and also potential new members to sing with them. They're doing the bonfire singing things, sitting around, fire singing. Right up to the very end, before she gets so sick she can't move, she's in her bed with, guys writing songs with her and playing songs with her. And once again, music was a big recruiting tool. And it seems to be, a consistent thing with cult leaders is that they're always heavily involved in music. Which, if you watch Shepherds, there are reasons why I think that is the case. But anyways, I just wanted to point out that it was the same thing with Amy Carlson. She was heavily into music and used it as a recruiting tool. But basically, Father God, at the end of it, after she dies, suddenly they reveal that after, a couple weeks of her being dead, all the money gets pulled out of the account that this Father God was drawing from. That was supposedly all the money they had raised for Mother God, Amy Carlson. And you find out that this guy that was a part of their group, he set up all the financial side for Amy. And Amy didn't have her name on anything. It was all this guy's accounts. And they reveal that she had $330,000 that had just been given to her that she was living off of. That was just sitting in this bank account. So this guy, once he had gotten word that she either passed away or was going to pass away, this guy in Colorado that set up everything, he just took the money out. He withdrew it all, and it was he was like, "Hey, it's my money." Well, they just basically drive through the night from Oregon with her body in the back seat, wrapped up in Christmas lights, and they drive to this guy's house, and they basically go knock knock. He opens the door, and they're like, "We're here," and this dude is frustrated. I'm can't even say the word, frustrated and flustered. You see him the following morning after they show up, and this girl's interviewing him. His name's Michael, and she's like, "Hey, what's wrong?" And he's like, "I can't even think straight right now." And she's like, "What is it?" And he's like, "Well, they showed me." And she's like, "Showed you what?" And he's like, "They showed me her." There's this pause, and he's like, "She's a corpse." And it shouldn't laugh, but in this moment, it just in this moment, you see just how far out it has become, where no one even knows what is normal in reality anymore. Like, this thing has just stretched so far that it just finally hits this guy how wrong all this is and how bizarre it is. But seeing this footage of them for days singing to this corpse and playing with this corpse that, turned completely green in the end, went from blue to green, and then back to like a dark greenish blue. And you realize that they're all just, it's like they're not having sex with this corpse, but it's very much like necromancing. It's like they're singing to her and they're touching her. And it's like, dear Lord, Someone put this girl to rest, man. She's gone, you know? And so what's really interesting to me is to wrap it up, essentially, the police come and they arrest everybody, and they later find out through the autopsy that she just died of alcoholism and silver poisoning. That's, her liver was shot, and the silver obviously was horrific for her, and she was drinking it by the gallon. So, in the end, nobody was charged with anything, although people felt like they should have been charged with tampering with a dead body. But no one was charged, and she was, laid to rest. But what's really fascinating, like I said, is the stories of people, because you say, who would follow this? Who would believe that Robin Williams was working with this girl to basically figure out the fate of humanity? The reason these cults have always fascinated me, it's the same reason why I was a sociology minor when I was in college, and I also minored in religious studies. I've always been fascinated about motivations, like what motivates people to do things. So after watching all three episodes of this, it became obvious to me that it would be really easy to miss what I think is the real message of this entire scenario, the kind of reason why it all happened. It's just such a bizarre story that, again, it's really easy to just go, oh, they're all just crazy people, and the world's filled with crazy people. And if you put, whatever messages out there in the world on the web, there's going to be somebody that responds to it. And while I would agree with like all of that, what's really unique is when you watch the interviews of all the people that became members of this cult, there's some really intelligent people here. And you say, well, how could they be intelligent if they think that this girl's talking to Robin Williams and if they're just watching her kill herself? And I don't think that's a lack of intelligence, because I'm not even sure I believe that any of them really even believed it. What becomes obvious to me is that they weren't crazy, that each of these members that followed this girl, they were desperate. And what do I mean by desperate? If you look at all living creatures in the world, all living creatures that are born, once something is born, there are usually two things that happen in order that all living creatures need, kind of their reason for being. And that's whether we're talking about whales, bonobo, apes, macaque monkeys, human beings, whatever. The first thing all living animals do is they look for a way to survive, right? Once you're born, like even a child knows how to breastfeed, right? Like babies, no one tells them. They just know it's in the DNA. Like, I have to survive. I have to eat. I have to drink. And all animals do that too. They all just look for a way to continue life. So that's like the first thing all living things need to do is to continue living. Once they establish that, the second thing is what I find to be the most fascinating about all living things, is once we all establish that method of survival, what is it that we all look for immediately right away? We look for love. We look for a place of belonging, a tribe, whether it be the love of a parent, which is usually the first thing that all living things, want, is that feeling of safety and feeling of that you matter and that connection. And you see it in all living things. I'm fascinated by monkeys, and it sounds funny, but Laura would I drive her nuts with it. She could tell you stories about my fascination with monkeys. As long as she has known me on my own spare time, whenever I have time, I study monkeys. I'm fascinated by just the way they operate. And I'm talking about everything from, like I said, to macaque monkeys to like the rise of the warrior apes and the Congo and the bonobos, the gorillas, all of them. The way they operate is so incredibly similar to human beings. And that is that human beings have such a deep-rooted desire to be loved. And if you take that away from a child, especially, it's just like we all kind of know this, right? All of our issues as adults that we have, all the things that we face, all of the things that all of our personality quirks, like all of this stuff comes back from the things that we endure as a child. You know, and there's a reason why like serial killers always have these like horrific backstories of things that happened to them as a child. But in differing degrees, you know, it depends on how we react to what we don't get. And what you find out in a lot of these people that were following Amy, they all had terrible stories of being disowned by either their parents, you know, or brothers, sisters, family members, or boyfriends, girlfriends, or just like troops, like tribes, right? Like family members, or they were immediately like adopted, or they were a foster child into a scenario that wasn't welcoming or warming. But you see that what they're all desperate for is they're desperate for that sense of belonging and that sense of self-worth, that sense of someone loving them. There's this part where they're talking about what was your childhood like on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, assign it a number. And this one girl that was a part of the, you know, love, by the way, the name of the cult is Love Has Won, right? Which is like the worst name for a cult ever, but it just shows how important love was to these people. And this girl's talking about her childhood, and she's like, on a scale of 1 to 10, my childhood was a 2. It involved rape, torture, like all this just horrific things. And the thing that this one girl, the entire series is talking about was this unconditional love that Mother God had for her and how she was there for her and always there to talk to her and to tell her, you know, how special she was. And this girl brought 3 of her children into this cult. She was a single mother with 3 children she brought into it. And with each person, they all have their backstories that almost all of them, in some varying degree, they just weren't loved as children. They weren't loved. So as adults, you know, they're dying for a way to feel that, you know? And that's that, like I said, that crazy thing about love. It's like, it is such a powerful emotion that does so much for us. And yeah, when you take it away, yeah, it's incredibly sad what happens to human beings and adults when that isn't there when you're a child, and what it does. And the lack of being loved, it just leaves this vacuum, man, where these people, as they demonstrated, would give up anything, anything, to feel like they were loved and they were a part of something, part of a tribe, a family, a group of people that says you matter, and I care about you, and I love you, and your well-being matters to me, and I will give something, I will give of myself to make you feel that love. In exchange for that, these people would give up, you know, security. They would give up, you know, reputation. They would give up belongings, you know, finances, you know, their family at times, which, you know, in most cases you find out that the family members are still in touch with these cult members. And they're just trying to get them to see this cult, you know, this group, you're part, they're a cult, like you're a part of a cult. And they just don't want to accept it. And for some reason, they just can't, you know, cross that bridge of acceptance so they can return to a normal life. But when this Amy died, you see them all right away talking about how they're going to continue on. And they're like, yeah, what do people think? That just because Mother ascended, that we'll just go back to our normal, they call it 3D life. Like, so we'll just go back to our normal life? Whatever, that's not what this is. And they show them like a year later, and a year later, without any money, without anybody to lead the organization, without any management. Of course, they are all back at home. They're all back re-engaged with their families. And they're all still involved in different spiritual things that they're doing. But what was a really important part of the docuseries, like I said, that I just really think gets missed, is that in most of these cases, I mean, I've said it a couple times already during this podcast, it's wrong to just dismiss people as crazy. And just to say they're crazy. Because when you see these people talking, to me, crazy is not when you're aware of what you're doing. And you know, like they know that the world thinks that their beliefs are bizarre. They know that. And they know they are bizarre. But they're still choosing to do it. Like, to me, that's not crazy. That's just making a really weird decision for very personal reasons. You know, to me, crazy is when you're just unaware of your actions and you don't even know what you're doing. You can't tell right from wrong. You don't know, you know, sensible from, you know, nonsensible. You know, like, that's crazy to me, you know. They just seem really desperate. And if you ever need any motivation, man, you know, especially if you're listening to this and you're a parent, if you're a new parent, right, if you just had a child, watch this documentary, man. This will show you what it does for a child that doesn't receive love. You know, how do they grow up? How do kids like that grow up? They grow up empty, man. They grow up with, you know, just holes inside of them. You know, the sad thing is you just can't go back. You know, you can't go back. There's no way to go back. And that's what you could see with these people in this documentary is, you could see because they interview a lot of their parents too. And you could hear, especially at the end, there's a couple members of this cult where they get their mom, and in both cases, it's the mom is on the phone. And both of these cult members' mothers, they both kind of start out the same way, and they're like, you do know I loved you, and I wish I said it more, and I wish I made you feel that more, and I never wanted to hurt you, and you know, you could hear that they recognized that that was a major problem that led to this. But there is, like I said, there's no going backwards. So it's just, yeah, that's just really important, you know, just really important to speak up when you feel it. But yeah, I would love to know what you guys think about this series. If you have HBO, give it a watch. Or in general, just what you think about these thoughts. I realize this isn't a podcast about aliens and ghosts and massive conspiracies, but I've always been fascinated with, you know, cults and the psychology around it. And just in general, man, when I see things that hit me as powerful, you know, that's part of the reason why I made this podcast was to talk to you guys about all kinds of stuff. And yeah, I just thought this was a very interesting story. So let me know what you guys think if you give it a watch. Thank you guys once again for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the In a Crowded Room podcast. And I'll be back tomorrow with more. All the best.